And welcome to the Solution Zone on the new AM 1230 KJFK. Happy to be with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Always the number to dial, 825-7529. Our email address is thesolutionzone@yahoo.com. And we are proud to be Northern Nevada's only live and local progressive talk station. And today on the program, I have a very special guest, Joshua Kors, and he is a freelance journalist based in New York City. He just had the cover story on the April 9th issue of The Nation magazine. And this is the story about how 25-year-old Army Specialist John Towne was basically treated by the military. It's a shocking story. It's a disturbing story. The problem is it has become a fairly typical story as more and more is revealed about the way the Bush administration pretty much runs everything, but especially their relationship with the military and with the veterans. And thanks for being on the program with us, Joshua.
Good to be with you, Christiane.
Well, this story is basically about the treatment of Army Specialist John Towne and what happened to him. Many people may have heard bits and pieces of this story. It's gotten out into the news media a little bit. But can you basically lay out for us from the beginning what happened to John Towne?
Absolutely. John Towne was an Army Specialist serving in Ramadi, Iraq. He was very near a rocket blast that left him largely deaf. Shrapnel in his neck, and other serious wounds. The Army honored those wounds with a Purple Heart, but later when it came time to discharge him, the Army decided that his deafness was actually caused by a pre-existing personality disorder, and discharging him through that mechanism, they were able to prevent him from collecting disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, this was a 107-millimeter rocket. It hit 2 feet above his head. The impact knocked a hole the size of a piano above his head. He fell down. He blacked out. After this point in time, he has shrapnel in his neck. They remove that. They give him the Purple Heart, as you said. And obviously, he is wounded in battle. But then he leaves the Army, and he gets to a point in time, right? He worked for a couple of years, tried to work for a couple of years, but it turned out that what occurred to him was making it hard for him to continue in the military.
That's right. It shook him up to the point where he had a hard time remembering things. I think many people in your audience will be familiar with the signs of traumatic brain injury, severe, long-lasting headaches, memory problems. There were also anger issues that one would associate with post-traumatic stress disorder. But Christiane, I should say, the importance of John's story is that he is by no means alone. In the last 6 years, the military has discharged 22,500 soldiers with this pre-existing personality disorder.
And this is where it gets weird, because normally what they should have done with John and with these other soldiers who have been injured during the war is send them to a medical board and then discharge them based on what their injuries are. But this personality disorder diagnosis, as you said, it's become very common. And basically, a personality disorder, it's called a 513 discharge. And what happens is that you lose your benefits if you are charged with this, because they say your condition was pre-existing, and therefore they don't have to pay, but give you any disability or any medical benefits whatsoever.
That's right. And by cheating these veterans out of their benefits, the military saves $12.5 billion over the course of these soldiers' lifetimes. That's $8 billion in disability pay and $4.5 billion in medical care. And you alluded to the benefits issue. That's a key aspect as well, because in addition to losing all medical care in the future from the VA and a disability pay, they also have to give back their signing bonus. And this is the salt in the wound for so many of these injured soldiers.
And why do they have to give that back? What do they base that criteria upon?
Because they've signed a document saying they'll serve X number of years. And because of their wounds, they are unable to serve those final years. Thus, they have to give back the money that would have come for those remaining years. That means that on the final day in uniform, so many of these injured soldiers find out they actually owe the Army several thousand dollars.
It's absolutely disgusting. And many military families, they're frustrated, they're infuriated, veterans' rights groups, but even military officials who have been required to process these dismissals are saying basically that they're finding that they feel this, they are purposely misdiagnosing these soldiers in order to make a buck.
Well, that's right. And you hit on the key word there, purposeful. In my 6 months investigating this story, I didn't come across a single case in which reasonable men could disagree, whether it was a personality disorder or not. In John's case, they said deafness was a personality disorder. In the case of Richard Dykstra, it was a bilateral hernia. They said his stomach problems were a pre-existing personality disorder. He thought he'd suffered that hernia during combat in Iraq. I think also of the case of William Wooldridge. Wooldridge ran over a young girl in his army truck while serving in Iraq. Later, he suffered schizophrenic-type delusions. The girl would come back to him in his Arkansas home asking why he had killed her.
And I wanted to jump in there because I read this story, and actually somebody pushed the girl in front of his truck.
That's
so
right.
When he ran her over, it was an accident.
Part of what he called the mental war that the rebels are running there to. And you do hear odd cases of that kind of out-of-bounds warfare fighting. The girl was pushed in front of his truck. He tried to swerve, but just couldn't do so in time. And when he started having these delusions, they said that he had a pre-existing condition, and he was stamped just as the others with this personality disorder, forcing him to give up all future benefits.
And they say that if you are diagnosed with this 513, it's basically like having a scarlet letter. I mean, once you have that, it's almost impossible to fight it.
Yeah, that was the words of one of the veterans advocates who's been helping these soldiers case after case. It's just so hard. He's been doing this for several years now, and they're just so reluctant to admit any wrongdoing. And in fact, that's been the case in the wake of publishing this article. I have been stunned by just how ferociously the Army has worked to cover up their diagnoses. In fact, I just got a memo from the acting Surgeon General, Gail Pollack. She wrote that all of the cases that she'd been presented, including specialist John Towns and a stack of others, had all been given a thorough and complete review, and that all the diagnoses were determined to be correct. Well, Christiane,
you're kidding me.
I did a touch more investigation and found out their thorough and complete review didn't involve calling a single soldier. I spoke this
Maybe
morning.
Maybe they mean they thoroughly looked at the piece of paper and turned it over and moved on to the next one.
Well, actually, what they did do is something even more suspicious, you could say. They contacted the doctors at Fort Carson, where many of these cases come from, including Towns, and spoke to the doctors who made the original questionable diagnoses. They asked them whether they got their own diagnoses correct the first time. The doctors said, yep, we got it right. And they said that was a thorough and complete review.
Now, you had, prior to the Surgeon General giving this recent result, you had written in your article that they heard these stories initially when these cases were brought before them. They were appalled by what they heard. So you wonder who got to those people or what changed in between the time that they were initially presented with these documents and they said, well, we need to look into this. I can't believe this is happening, to the point where they say, oh, yeah, it's fine. They were right.
Well, I think there's a real split there. To be appalled is a momentary reaction. Mm. To take action with all of its political consequences is something entirely different. And in fact, to assist that point, I look at a memo I received just days ago from Lieutenant Colonel Bob Tallman. He he said in his statement that they had gone back and reviewed the last 4 years of cases at Fort Carson and found all of those entries, hundreds of them, to be correct. Well, I spoke with Bob Tallman this morning and asked him how he could call those a thorough review without calling those soldiers. And you know what he told me?
No.
He told me he didn't write the statement. It was written by someone else. He knew absolutely nothing about this issue. He said they simply stamped his name and his office on the statement because, in his words, the Army wanted to put, quote, an Army face on a response to this military issue.
It's shocking. There's so much more to this, and we're going to go to a quick break and come back. I'm speaking with Joshua Kors. His cover story article on the April 9th issue of The Nation magazine is talking about this thanks for nothing, basically. Give you a Purple Heart and then cut off all your benefits. This is the way the United States military is working now under the Bush administration. We'll come back right after this. You're dialed into the Solution Zone on the new AM 1230 KJFK. On the Solution Zone on the new AM 1230 KJFK. I'm Christiane, and my guest this hour is Joshua Kors. He is a freelance writer in New York City, and his cover story on The Nation magazine is talking about this brand new diagnosis, or I shouldn't say brand new, but an overuse of a diagnosis, personality disorder, that they are now using to cut off the benefits of soldiers returning from Iraq with injuries that are obviously not personality disorders. And Josh, again, thanks for being with us on the show.
Problem.
Now, this was interesting. In your article, Army doctors who give questionable diagnosis face no danger of malpractice suits. That, I thought, was very interesting because in this way, these doctors can misdiagnose these cases and they really have, nobody has any recourse to do anything to them if they're wrong.
Well, no legal recourse. There's a Supreme Court case Ferries v. U.S. from 1950, which states that soldiers who are misdiagnosed, regardless of how severe their misdiagnosis is, cannot sue the doctor, cannot sue the Army. That provides a great shield for these doctors who, in many cases, are pressured to misdiagnose.
Well, let's
really
talk. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Let's talk about that. Why are they being pressured to misdiagnose? What you looked into this, and it's very interesting.
There are a multitude of reasons. First of all, again, there's the $12.5 billion that the Army is set to save. Then there are the on-base political pressures. I spoke with several lawyers at these Army bases who told me that the commanders at the base are putting pressure on the doctors to misdiagnose. They're saying, here's the discharge we'd like, here's the diagnosis you're going to have to give to make that discharge possible. What one of the officials told me, he knew the commanders were doing this because they had come to him and confessed that they were.
Well, since the Iraq War began, it's been reported in many articles that the Bush administration really didn't, besides not planning for the war, besides not sending in enough troops, besides not understanding what they were doing on the way in, they also made no plans whatsoever for the veterans that would be coming back. And one of the issues that a lot of these doctors have been facing is, you write in your article, is an overflow of wounded soldiers, a shortage of rooms, supplies. And if they diagnose this personality disorder instead of a post-traumatic stress disorder, if they diagnose it as a personality disorder, they can get that soldier out very, very quickly and free space for others who are waiting.
That's right. Those hospitals are simply overflowing with soldiers. Nobody expected the war to last this long or to produce this many wounded. So by misdiagnosing the soldiers, they get them out the door fast as opposed to getting them to a med board, which is how wounded soldiers are correctly processed out. That takes about 6 months. The hospitals have a waiting list, soldiers that need to be treated. If they can get one guy out the door, that means the three or four who are waiting can be seen more in a more timely fashion.
You were saying, again, in your article, the nation was able to, the Army basically holds these records of these soldiers, these medical records pretty privately, and you can't really get a hold of them. But the nation was able to locate about six soldiers from different bases across the country, and you talked about a couple of them who were diagnosed with personality disorder, and every single one that you talked to rejected that diagnosis, says, this is not the case at all. I can't believe that this is what I was diagnosed with.
That's right, that's right. And in fact, these soldiers told me one more facet of their discharge that I think will strike listeners as particularly galling. They said they were directly lied to by their doctors at the Army hospital. The doctors told them, if you accept this personality disorder discharge, you will get medical care, you will get disability pay, you will get to keep your signing bonus. It's only in their final hours on base they find out none of those promises were true.
And at that point, there's nothing whatsoever that they can do about it, it seems.
Well, they can stay and fight. They can say, no, I'm not going to sign. But so many of these soldiers, you have to understand the psychology. It's a total shock to them. They're 1 or 2 hours from leaving base and that hope of a new life. They're wounded, they're worn down, they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. They just want to get out of there. And, we spoke before about benefits for the Army, motivation. There's one other key motive that we didn't get to, and that's the military success of each of these units. They're telling the soldiers, look, if we can get you out fast, we can fill your spot with a soldier that is healthy and competent. A lot of these guys care so much for their buddies, they want to see them have protection from a soldier taking their spot who's fully healthy and capable.
The shamefulness of these tactics, it just brings such shame down on the United States of America, on this administration, on the way that we have treated our veterans. And I think especially when you look at the rhetoric that has been used by this administration, that they're constantly using the terminology, support the troops, we support the troops, we're trying to help the troops. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of a twinge of conscience when they are doing these things to soldiers who have given their all, who have gone into battle for their country and are now obviously suffering because of that sacrifice that they made, and to screw them essentially on the way out. It's so amazingly shameful and surprising to me that obviously so many people can be complicit in this and allowing this to happen.
Well, complicity is easy when your career's on the line. As one of the guys said to me when asked information, you want me to risk a career of a dozen years simply to tell you what's going on here at the base? There's a lot at stake. But I do think you're right about the White House. This scandal cannot be viewed unless it's put against the backdrop of the president visiting Walter Reed this past week and saying, we're going to be there for the troops. But he hasn't even acknowledged this scandal.
No.
And until that happens, until the public puts pressure on him and the other officials involved to testify before a congressional hearing, none of the answers that these soldiers need are going to come to light.
So at this point in time, what is being done with regard to congressional hearings, with regard to bringing this information before the Congress, before the Senate, and getting to the bottom of yet another scandal with this administration?
Well, I think the short answer is absolutely nothing. As I said, the acting Surgeon General, Gail Pollack, spoke about how appalled she was by this when presented these cases in October. Then did this non-review review in which she contacted no soldiers and considered the case closed. Senator Kit Bond was also at that meeting, and he floated the idea of having a congressional hearing on this topic, but later would not respond to the veterans organization that presented those cases and wouldn't answer my phone calls either.
So at this point, is it dead in the water? What's being done? Are you pushing further? Are we trying to contact someone else on this story? Or is it just done, a done deal? Because it's hard to believe that it could stop there.
Well, done is too finite of a term. I try to be a touch more hopeful than that.
Yeah.
If you type in the word specialist town into Google, you get over 5 million hits. And this story just came out days ago. So if there's that kind of profound reaction that quickly, there's a chance this could snowball and lead to a congressional investigation that would get the changes these soldiers need.
Well, we're going to go to a quick break and come back. And I wanted to touch on a couple of the other stories that you talked about besides Jonathan Towne, and go over some of these other personality disorders, just to lay out what we're looking at here and how glaring the evidence is in the face of what you just said that the Surgeon General said upon reviewing these cases. We're going to take a break and come back with Joshua Kors right after this. You're dialed into the Solution Zone on the new AM 1230 KJFK. Thanks for being with us on the Solution Zone on the new AM 1230 KJFK. I'm Christy on with my guest Joshua Kors, who has written an excellent article in the April 9th edition of The Nation magazine. And you can go to thenation.com online and read the editorial. And it's just such a great one again, Joshua. And we wanted to talk about a couple of these other veterans, again, who were diagnosed with these personality disorders. One of these, Richard Dykstra, went to a hospital in Fort Stewart, Georgia. He complained of flashbacks, anger, stomach pains, and the doctor actually said to him, "Wow, I can see you've been reading up on PTSD."
Yes, her notes are quite interesting. I have the medical records there, which show that basically she accused him of faking it. Yet in they said she accused him of memorizing the criteria for PTSD and spilling them out as if it was a rehearsed statement. Her notes are particularly interesting on Mr. Dykstra because she writes that he has no previous psychiatric history. Of course, the personality disorder discharge is specifically for someone with such a severe previous psychiatric history that he's incapable of serving.
So what's interesting about this is any layman could basically read these cases, go through, and see that the cases don't match up with the military criteria for diagnosing personality disorder. And yet again, as we have said, these cases have been allowed to stand, and it's said that they have been fully reviewed. Here's another one. This was, I guess his name was Chris Mosier. Is that how it's pronounced? Linda Mosier's son, that she says when he left for Iraq in 2004, he was a normal kid. He came back and it was just bizarre, a lot of bizarre behavior. He wouldn't sit down for a meal. He kept walking around. She'd take him to the department store and he'd say, "Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go." He couldn't sleep. And then finally, he reached basically a breaking point and ended up killing himself.
That's right. Chris's case highlights another sour aspect to these stories. When the soldiers are purposely misdiagnosed, that means they don't get the diagnosis they really need, which means they don't get the treatment that is going to save them from disasters like this. Chris was given just a few days of treatment after the doctor, Dr. Mark Wexler, the same doctor who treated specialist John Towne, diagnosed him and his schizophrenic-type delusions as a personality disorder. He went back to his Des Moines, Iowa home and put a note up on the door saying the Iraqis were after him there in Iowa and that he had to save the family. And then he shot himself. It's the medical aspect of this is particularly troubling when you think about the setup of the Army's regulations. Each soldier is screened twice before serving in Iraq, once when they join the Army, and again before deploying. In each of these cases, I have the medical records here that show that these soldiers were perfectly healthy in those first two screenings. It's only when they come back from Iraq wounded and ask for benefits that their pre-existing condition is discovered.
Suddenly, yeah, it's suddenly discovered. Well, let's talk about it. Mosier told his mother of a breaking point in Iraq. He said a roadside bomb blew up the truck in front of his. His buddies were screaming. They were on fire. And at the end, he was there to pick up the hands and the arms of his friends. You would think, yeah, that this would be a mental injury that would last you for the rest of your life. When these soldiers are sent so cavalierly into war, again, by this administration, nobody seems to have taken into consideration what they are going to be going through and how, in general, their service, if they see much combat or if they're in these kinds of situations, will ruin them for the rest of their lives, and they will come back disturbed, and they will come back in great need of help from a country that is basically not there to help them. At all.
You remind me that I spoke with Specialist John Towne just yesterday. He found out yesterday morning that four of his buddies from his unit had been killed in Iraq, and this threw him for a tailspin. The flashbacks came back with even more ferocity, and not to mention the headaches that are still there. He hasn't slept in 3 days now, he said. He's been so wound up about this. And this is a time when he really could use the medical benefits that would come with a disability discharge. He doesn't have it, so now in this extra time of need, he's even that much farther into trouble.
When he's at a point right now, he has no job, he has no money, he has no medical benefits. He has nothing whatsoever right now, besides which he has to deal with these problems, and he owes the military money on top of all. It's just, it's so disgusting. You can barely take it in. And going back to these doctors who made this misdiagnosis, you know, very interestingly, Wexler, we talk about Mark Wexler, and again, he is the doctor who made the initial diagnosis with Towne and then with another one of these soldiers we were just talking about. His boss basically declined, Stephen Knorr declined to speak in your interview, but basically they say that these diagnoses occur, and as you said, these traumatic feelings that somebody has, these pre-existing conditions, because they go to Iraq and they experience something like this, this will trigger a pre-existing condition. That's the excuse that they're using. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, actually, Wexler's boss, Colonel Stephen Knorr, did speak to me. We spoke for about 3 hours. And he gave that justification that you mentioned, that the reason these pre-existing conditions aren't discovered in the first two screenings is that a crisis like serving in Iraq with all of its stress can trigger a condition like personality disorder that has lain dormant for these soldiers' entire lives. I spoke with a professor of psychiatry at UCSF, Keith Armstrong, who just wrote a book about these issues called Courage After Fire. He says that's absurd. That's simply not how personality disorder works. And I'm sure all the people in your audience who are members of the psychiatric profession know that to be the case. It's a strange justification. Knorr went even further when talking about family to diagnose these soldiers as having a pre-existing condition. They don't interview a single person. They don't find out whether it existed before service by talking to their mother, their wives, their siblings, or even members of the unit who served with them before the injury. He said the reason that's standard procedure is because family and friends don't have the keen psychological insight that he and his staff does to recognize personality disorder and all of its subtleties.
Yes, these guys are cranked past them one after the other as quickly as possible. They have time to get to know these soldiers better than their families. It's absurd.
Yeah. Professor Armstrong, who's been treating wounded veterans for 20 years, the San Francisco VA, says, again, that's just way off the mark. At his VA, he feels that family and friends are so important in diagnosing personality disorder, he actually has the soldiers bring their families into the meetings with him so that they can get a better sense of what they have and how to treat it.
Because they have seen these soldiers prior to. All of these interviews that you have listed in this article talk about the family members who know what these people were like, who remember what they were like before, and that they're absolutely a different person. And Dave, my producer, made an interesting point. He said, if the crisis, as you were just alluding to, can be traumatic enough, as this Noor says, to trigger an event like that, wouldn't they be traumatic enough to cause stress, to cause a problem? It's an amazingly stupid thing to say.
It's a strange diagnosis and a strange justification. I think it comes because the military at this point doesn't have a good explanation. Either they have to argue that their diagnosis system is so broken that the first two diagnoses were complete failures, and only the third, after the injury, gave the successful diagnosis. Or they have to throw up their arms and say, yes, we cheated these wounded veterans. They're not ready to do that, so they have to turn to these earlier diagnoses and say, no, these simply weren't looking at the same data, the same soldier. That's why this situation is so troubling for so many who've been reading about it. The cases are so clear-cut.
And as you said, all of these soldiers are looked at before they go into the military. They're psychologically evaluated before they go in, and they have no such disorders. And then for just that argument again to be made that, these disorders were triggered by that. You could use that argument. It's just like I always think to myself when somebody uses the plea of insanity during murder, basically when you reach to that point, you have gotten past the point of reason, which is why you end up killing somebody anyway. So it's an empty argument at this point in time. I wanted to go back to William Wooldridge.
Christian, let me go back to John Towne. You mentioned before about him owing the Army money.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting side story because that's no longer the case.
Oh, what happened?
John contacted his representative, Michael Oxley, from Ohio. Oxley contacted the Pentagon, and the Pentagon official contacted John and gave him an ultimatum, said, here's the deal. We'll cancel the money you owe us if you forget about ever trying to get your disability recognized and your misdiagnosis corrected. And John obviously thought that was an awful deal, but when they decided to send him the money anyway, he took it. So he no longer owes them money, but they also have turned their back on trying to fix it. And later, when I tried to contact Michael Oxley's office, Oxley has since retired, but neither he nor any of his staff would speak to me while they were in office or now afterwards.
This is incredible, incredible information that you have here. This is a very, very strong case, and it seems to me that there's a great deal of evidence here that could be brought forward to somebody who cares about veterans and who cares about the way that we're treating our soldiers. I wanted to go back to William Wooldridge, and you talked to him, talked about him, of course, before. This is the one with the little girl who was pushed in front of his vehicle.
Yeah.
He actually reached a point where he was able to change the diagnosis, correct?
That's right. He's one of the spare few that had success in trying to get this overturned. The Army Discharge Review Board voided Williams' 513 personality disorder discharge after quite a lot of fighting. But that's... Again, there are so many strange details, and even that successful story, the VA then did go ahead and give him a 100% completely disabled mark. That means he will be getting money from them. But what they did in fixing his personality disorder discharge is not go ahead and admit that he was wounded. They changed it to secretarial authority, which is a literal catch-all for anything. You look it up in the Army Discharge Manual. It says use this provision when absolutely nothing else applies.
Basically, we don't have to explain why. Just
exactly.
Do it.
Exactly. And so that was yet another dead end in William's effort to get the Army to admit that he was disabled.
And these numbers keep rising. 805 cases in 2001, 980 cases in 2003. From January to November 2006, 1,086 cases of diagnosis. And one of the military officials who handles it just says it's getting worse and worse every single day. He says it's up to 3 or 4 soldiers a day coming through his office. Suddenly everyone has this personality disorder.
That is the case. Yeah. Although I have to say, since the publication of the article, I had a fascinating conversation with Frank Ochberg, the medical doctor who codified post-traumatic stress disorder for the government. And he said, well, he recognizes that this is getting worse and worse each year now, massive jumps as the war is continuing. He said decades ago it was actually worse, because back in those days, you either got the fake diagnosis, personality disorder, or nothing. There was no alternative. At least now, in the case of, say, William Wooldridge, after fighting, some soldiers can get that correct diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder.
But still, it's still not a situation that is in any way working for these soldiers. And it's like you have two bad choices to make. It's the, you know, people feel like that a lot when they vote, I think. I'll vote for the least bad person who stands for a few of the things that I believe in, because these are my only choices that I have. The military is left with bad choices altogether. Do you think this is symptomatic of this administration, or do you think it goes back even further than that?
Well, I'd say this is not a left or right issue. This is not about the Republicans or the Democrats. I think every side can back the idea of properly diagnosing and giving benefits to the wounded veterans coming back from Iraq. I think that is what's going to give this scandal legs and put the public focus on it. But you know, who's responsible at this point? I think it's really the Army and the White House. The onus is on them to say, we're going to recognize this and we're going to fix it. In fact, as Bob Tallman, the spokesman for the Army who didn't write the statement, which is assigned to Bob Tallman, as I found out this morning, the one thing he did tell me is that it's an open secret that we're not properly serving our wounded veterans. And
it's an open secret, news
to your listeners.
No, there are so many open secrets these days. The secret that Karl Rove is running the country, the secret that Dick Cheney's the president, the secret that there's so many open, you know, the emperor has no clothes. I would say we have just a nudist colony up there if you want to think about all of the open secrets that nobody is saying anything and nobody is talking about. And it's right out there in front of everybody. What can people do listening to this program now? What can they do to help with this?
Well, I'd say that the number one thing is they can go to The Nation, read the article, How Specialist Town Lost His Benefits. And if they like the article, forward it on. I think the more people know about this issue, the more there's going to be a spotlight on getting these wounded veterans their correct diagnosis and their correct benefits. Beyond that, I've encouraged people to write to their congressman. Christian, you remind me of another phone call I received recently from a lawyer in Nevada who wanted to know whether there were any of these cases I came upon in Nevada, because she was interested in helping those soldiers sue the doctors in some kind of civil suit. I didn't know of any cases in Nevada, but I certainly will keep her abreast of any details.
Well, that's wonderful. That's really good to know. Can you tell us who that attorney was and give her our business? that's just wonderful. That's great to know that
people are reaching out from all over. And in fact, John Towne himself told me that he's been flooded with phone calls. Makes me glad that I mentioned that he was from Findlay, Ohio. Turns out there's only one Towne family in Findlay, Ohio. People have been looking them up and contacting him and saying, you know, the government's turned its back on you. What can I do to help?
Yeah, incredible story. Joshua, I just appreciate you so much being on the program and talking about this story. And again, people can go to The Nation and read this article, how Specialist Towne lost his benefits. And again, forward it to people you know, talk to your congressman, email people, and let them know what's going on in our country right now with regard to these troops that we supposedly support. Thanks so much for being on the program with us.
Good to be with you, Christian.
You have a great afternoon. We'll be back right after this on the Solution Zone. We're the new AM 1230 KJFK. We're back on the Solution Zone on the new AM 1230 KJFK. I'm Christian. What an upsetting story. What an amazing story. And yet, doesn't it somehow not amaze you at all? Not amazed you at all that this is happening to our wounded soldiers in the United States of America. One thing that was important that Joshua pointed out before he went is that if you know anybody, military families or you know somebody who is in a military family, you can tell them that they can demand a medical board examination before signing this 513 document. It is their legal right to demand that there is a medical board review of their condition before signing this document. But what's happened to a lot of these soldiers that you will read if you get a chance to look into this article is that they're not told the truth. Not only are they told that they will get their benefits if they sign this 513, but they are not told the truth as to what it actually means. They're not told anything about it. They're not told what it says. They just say, again, sign this so that you can get out of the military. Sign this so that you can help your buddy. Sign this. Just sign this and get the heck out of my office. If you try to reverse this 513, because then they do, of course, find out once this happens that they're not getting their money. They find out that they're not getting their benefits. If you try to reverse it, a soldier basically is put in a situation where they have a ton of paperwork. Now, remember, a lot of these soldiers are already psychologically damaged. They're already without a lot of money. They're trying to deal with returning to society, all these things. They have a thicket of paperwork. They have appeals panels. They have to deal with all of the politics. I mean, look at that woman saying, gosh, I've seen that you've read up on PTSD. If you try to put yourself in the mindset of what some of these people are thinking, oh God, here's another one. Here's another one who's got these issues and I need to get them out of my office as quickly as I can. Even they say with the guidance of an experienced advocate, it's almost impossible to reverse a 513 discharge. This is just a horror going on in the United States of America. And the sad part is, again, so many things that I look into every day, so many things I read every day are like this. Layers and layers of corruption, layers and layers of mismanagement, layers and layers, again, of the people. And I think that's the question that keeps going back to my head. Who are these people? Who are these people? Is it just to save your job? Do people reach a point in time where they have to separate themselves because it is so corrupt in government, because it is so corrupt in the military, because it is so corrupt in life that they have to decide, hey, I've got to make more for me. Instead of doing what's right, I need to do what I can to survive. Is it an every man for himself or every woman for herself mentality now that we are reaching in the United States of America? Is it so corrupt now that at the end of the day, the people in charge are more worried about losing their jobs or losing their positions or being blackballed than they are about doing right, than they are about helping somebody who is suffering? It's amazing to me and appalling to me. And if you look at our youth, if you look at our kids today and what they're being raised on, and you watch television and you watch some of these cartoons and some of these programs, you really almost see it coming out in those programs too. You see it coming out in I don't know if I told this story yet on the air, but this really bothered me. And it's a simple story, but it's kind of symptomatic. I was picking up my daughter from junior high. And it was windy. And the wind came up, and this poor kid dropped his backpack, and his papers blew all over the place, like 50 or so papers flying through the air. And I got out of my car, and I started to help him pick up his papers. And not one child stopped to help this kid. And not only did not one child stop, but the kids were grinding their feet into the papers and stepping on the papers and kicking the papers and laughing at the child. And I'm not talking about one bully or two kids. I'm talking about the majority of the children standing there did nothing whatsoever to help this child. And it was almost like they got a thrill, an opportunity to find somebody to pick at, somebody to peck on. And this pecking order has sort of become the story of our society. I see it all the time. I call it bratitude, this attitude that these little kids have now, and they learn it from TV. They don't learn that you should help your fellow man. They don't learn that you should do unto others. They learn more for me. How am I going to get attention? How am I going to get famous? How am I going to get noticed? Who's going to think that I'm more important than anybody else? It's a pack mentality, and you see it going up into this level of government. You see these people who don't care what they do to others as long as they survive themselves. It's absolutely disgusting to me, and I'm hopeful every time I get a glimpse in our society that there are still people out there who care. There are still parents out there who teach their kids manners, who teach their kids to care for others, who help people out. And there are plenty of people who still do, but not enough. And I think we have to look to the communications. We need to look to the media. We need to look to the society that we're raising our kids in, and then wonder how it can be like this and decide what we can do about it. That's it for me on The Solution Zone. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Hope you have a great afternoon. We're the new AM 1230 KJFK.